Welcome to Your Next Mission podcast with the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and co-founder of the American Freedom Foundation, Jack L. Tilley. Proudly presented by Cavalry Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans.
Hello out there, warriors past and present, and your families, and thank you for your service to our great country. Welcome to season three of Your Next Mission video podcast, a program initiative of the American Freedom Foundation. I'm Jack L. Tilley. You know I'm always pumped about that. 12th Sergeant Major of the Army and your host for today's show. But now before we get started, I personally want to thank our presenting sponsors, Cavalry Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans for making Your Next Mission happen. They love our veterans and families. And I'm going to say it every week. We love them too. We have an incredible show for you today. We're celebrating the birthday of one of our country's greatest leaders, Dr. Martin Luther King. And I'm so excited to introduce Anselm Beach, Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Army for Equity and Inclusion. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you. Happy New Year. I think it's been a little while since we connected at AUSA, so I'm absolutely honored to be here with you today.
Well,
thank you.
Thank you so much. You know, I think the audience is really excited about hearing all the stuff you want to talk about today, but there's always a but in there. But before we do that, can you tell the audience just a little bit about yourself?
Absolutely. So I know you hearing me and you're thinking that this is the best DC accent that you've ever heard. I was actually born in the Caribbean in a little island called St. Vincent. Yeah. And I would say that, you know, growing up, if somebody told me that I would have left St. Vincent, came to the United States, be a part of the world's greatest army, I'd still be laughing. But I am thrilled. I'm in the greatest country in the world and honored to be to still serve in the United States Army as an Army civilian, to work on some big initiatives that, you know, a very transformational time in our Army. We are moving through modernization, Secretary Warmoth's 6 objectives. So it's exciting and it's great to be here.
Well, thank you so much. You know, it's funny you say that because when I was in the Army is always transitioning. You know, they can't stop in one spot. So, they got to keep moving forward. We can't be stationary too long. Anselm.
Well, you know, the Army keeps rolling along.
That's right. I can start singing if you want to. Anselm, how did Dr. King influence your life?
So, you know, I mentioned that I was born in the Caribbean.
Yeah.
So, growing up in the Caribbean, I think I would say that it was the magnitude of the man. The fact that when Martin Luther King died, the whole world grieved for him.
Yeah.
And those are the things that I remember the most. I remember the comments from my mom. Yeah, and though, you know, we lived in this little island and nobody ever met Dr. King. It was just his teachings that were so transformational that they impacted outside the boundaries of the United States. So listening to all that stuff on a transistor radio, I would say that, you know, they were the fundamental tenets just about service and about being good and about being a part of something bigger than yourself.
Absolutely. You know, it's funny you say that because it's about his legacy, about the things that he put in place and about the changes that he made that were sure have certainly affected a lot of people. Dr. King's contributions and legacy are well documented. Are they still relevant today, and how do they apply to the military service?
Yeah, so, you know, I think to answer that question, one of my quotes from Dr. King, you know, is that everyone has the power for greatness, not for fame, but for greatness, because greatness is determined by service. And I think when we say, you know, how does that impact? You know, service is what soldiers are about. You know, as soldiers, we are about, you know, about serving. So I would say that, you know, while a lot of people think about Dr. King as a preacher, I think I think about him more as a leader. And his legacy of leadership and of service, I think, has a very, very close tie to the military and specifically to our Army, because that's what we do. Our Army, as you well know, over 247 years of service, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Army is 247 years old, older than the nation itself. And it only has that legacy because of a leader's past and present, their focus on service, for soldiers past, present, and future. I think that is where that tie come in, specifically how we are connected to Dr. King, in this current day.
Yeah. You know, MLK Day is observed as a day of service, a day on, not a day off. Do you see how do you see the linkage, to that in the Army?
Yeah. So, that somewhere around the world, there's a soldier on duty. And that duty is 24/7, 365 days a year. We have a soldier deployed someplace around the world. And that dedication to holding the line is really focused on that imprint of service. And so as we think about, observing Dr. King's day, a day on, not a day off, I think so many soldiers could relate to that, because how many times are we really off, right? It's a 24/7 requirement. And that's really how I see those things. People join the Army because they want to be a part of something bigger than themselves. And there are different reasons why people join the Army. But once you get into the Army, there are a million reasons to love the Army. And you love the Army because of the camaraderie, the esprit de corps, and just that dedication to duty, that dedication to service, and being exposed to great leaders.
Yeah.
And I think those are the two ties with Dr. King and the military.
I think the other thing that was really important is that, and I'm sure we do it now, is when you have a day off, there's a lot of discussion about why there's a day off, what's going on. I think the units within the Army are talking about why we're specific day off, and a lot of classes about Martin Luther King and why this is a very special day for everybody, I'm sure. Do you put something out from your office about Martin Luther King, about that specific day and the day off? I mean, I'm sure you do prior to a couple of weeks prior to that, or a month or so prior to that.
Yeah, and I think, you're asking a really, really good question, because there are lots of things that we celebrate across the nation. And sometimes we say, well, what is that relevance today, right? Why do we still do these things? So we, in fact, do what we call bugle notes, and we send out bugle notes across the Army. Defense Equal Opportunity Management Institute, which is down at Patrick Air Force Base, where we send our equal opportunity advisors to train, and this is for all services. They have a great website that they provide materials to talk about the relevance of, why we do certain things and what they mean now. I think more than ever, again, you started out by saying you're the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. And of course, you know how important people are. Mm-hmm. And when you look across our ranks, you see people from every different culture, multi different countries represented in our Army. And the ability to have these people mobilized, and the ability to really have them in the formation and to work together as a unit, becomes some of the reasons why we celebrate and we recognize these different holidays that are laid out.
Yeah, you brought up a minute ago about DEOMI down in Florida. I went to DEOMI years ago. I was a division sergeant major, and I think it was the Equal Opportunity NCO or officer came up and says, "Hey, sergeant major, they got a command class that you can go and just stay 1 week." And I said, "Sure, I'd love to go." And I'm really glad you brought that up. But what I found when I went there is what I didn't know. You know what I mean? I mean, I didn't know about things, maybe things I was saying or doing and all that other stuff. And it really opened my eyes. In fact, it opened my eyes so much, and I told a story the other day here, but it opened my eyes so much that when I deployed when I went back to the division, I immediately set up more classes for the division and started making sure that, in the brigades and battalions and stuff, there's more emphasis placed on it. And when we deployed into Bosnia, there's two organizations I wanted to make sure that I was close to me. First one, of course, was reenlistment. I wanted to make sure all those guys and gals reenlisted when I was down in Bosnia. The second was Equal Opportunity NCO. We never stopped giving classes when I was deployed down there, because I think it's important for us to learn about cultures, about differences, about how do we educate each other. So that was important. Again, it was an eye-opener, and I think a lot of people, I know the Army does a good job, but I think a lot of people in our country could probably learn a lot from going to places like DEOMI.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say to you that, you know, I was a non-commissioned officer.
Hoorah.
And so, you know, I worked at the NC Academy as a small group leader.
Yeah.
And we had to take a class on prevention of sexual harassment to be certified and for accreditation. And there was this non-commissioned officer who presented to us. This guy was a tanker, right? So he was
Don't go there. I'm a tanker now. Be careful.
So, you know, you don't normally think about tankers as very charismatic and very empathic people, right?
Oh, there you go.
But here was this non-commissioned officer, because you normally think, you know, our stereotype is that we think about steel on target, right? And there was this non-commissioned officer who was so people savvy. I wanted to know, like, how did you get this way? Like, and he told me that he was an equal opportunity advisor. He went to DOMI.
Yeah.
And you know, that immediately motivated me to submit a 4187 so I could also go to DOMI. And had I not gone to DOMI, I probably wouldn't be talking to you today in this position. So I'm simply saying that, you know, our Army provides opportunities way beyond all we could imagine.
Yeah.
Not just, you know, and so at the individual level, but also as an organization, you know, sending somebody like me to DOMI for 16 weeks back then, many more people to DOMI, so that we could infuse this knowledge of how we make our people better. And I think sometimes when we talk about race and race relations and the differences in people, we get into a one-sided conversation. But much like how we do PT to get stronger and we go to the range to improve our ability to shoot, we've got to be able to understand how we relate to each other, because our people are a best resource, and we can't do it. It doesn't happen automatically. It happens through difficult conversations. It happens by us having very deliberate training about these differences, our history, where we are, where we were, and where we are heading to. And I think those are really fundamental to how we move our Army forward, especially in this 21st century, where we are competing for everybody else with talent. And as you know, it's a very consequential time in the world, because the world is still a very dangerous place, and we need our Army more than ever.
Yeah, absolutely. One of the things, and so the one of the things I used to tell people, that people that look like me, are make sure we send a lot of them to DOMI too, because there has to be a balance. And don't just, because I remember one time years ago, I was talking to, I was going to talk, I don't know if it's Martin Luther King or Black History Month, one or the other, but I was going to go talk. And when I went in there, it was probably 99% minorities. And I spoke, and we had a good time and all that stuff. And when I left there, I told the guys I was with, I said, you know something, there has to be a better balance. There has to be, you know, white guys, black guys, Hispanic, everybody. So you can't learn anything if you talk to each other, if that makes sense. So if I'm talking to you about race relations and equal opportunity, and we're all talking, you know, we all understand the meaning of that, how do we get more people involved in that process? And I always thought that was important. I don't make sense. Hopefully it makes sense to you.
No, you absolutely do. And I think, you know, part of it is that we've got to normalize
how
these conversations.
Yeah.
I tell you a quick story. So, you know, here I am, right? I was just in the United States. I joined the Army. I'm at Fort Stewart, Georgia. It was home of the 24th Infantry back then.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I come up on levy, so I go to Germany. I got to my unit that Friday night. You know, within an hour, there's a knock on my door, and it was my squad leader, and he told me he's going to come and get me that Sunday so I could watch the football game. So he takes me over to his house, and the rest of the squad there, and the game comes on, and everybody gets quiet. Now, they're quiet, and I'm quiet, but I'm quiet for a very different reason. I'm quiet because I don't even know what the heck's going on. when you say football,
you thought it was
I'm
soccer.
Thinking soccer. Absolutely. And I'm, you know, so I'm like, why are these guys playing football in helmets and pads? And my squad leader sits down to me and he said, oh, you're from the island.
Yeah.
So this is American football.
Yeah.
And he walks me through, and I leave there that night. I'm excited. Why? I know what a touchdown is. I know what a field goal is. I know what third and inches, you know, I know what that stuff is.
Yeah.
And so here was the guy, the true leader, practicing the principles of diversity, equity, inclusion.
Yeah.
He didn't say, and that's what it is about. It's how we understand each other, how we have these shared experiences, and how we grow together. I mean, so you know, we also just created a model. It's called the WHO model. Three questions every leader needs to know, every military leader: who their people are, how they show up, and what they bring.
Yeah.
And when you have those conversations, you navigate the complexity of race, gender, and all these other things, and you really start putting people on a path for readiness.
Yeah, yeah. We're having a great discussion. We're talking with Anselm Beach, Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Army for Equity and Inclusion, and you're watching Your Next Mission video podcast with me, your host, Jack Attilly, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army. Don't forget, if you're enjoying this discussion, if you're not, there's something wrong with you. Please like us. Click on that subscribe button below. I'm loving this discussion. And so let's talk about Dr. King's leadership style. And we sort of got into that a few minutes ago. What do you think leaders today can learn from the way he led people?
Yeah, so that's a great question. And I think, you know, sometimes a lot of people think about Dr. King and they think about him as this preacher. They think about him as this great orator. They think about him, you know, in those ways. But what they don't really kind of think through is him as a leader and his leadership style. Mm-hmm. And I would categorize his leadership style akin to like the servant leader, right? So I would say if there's another way that we could have seen Dr. King, I would say that he would have been a non-commissioned officer, right?
He probably would. Absolutely.
Right? And so why do I say that? Well, as non-commissioned officers, we are taught a few things. And, you know, one of the things that we know is that leaders eat last, right? Mm-hmm. So we are always focused on the well-being and the welfare of our people. And we are focused on, you know, how we provide training. And another thing, you know, that we non-commissioned officers do is that we provide on-the-spot corrections, meaning that we upholding the standards, but we are doing that with dignity and respect. And when you think back about Dr. King and how he led, he led with empathy. He didn't tell people to go do something that he did not do. He was arrested and put in jail with the rest of every person, with everyone else. I think that's the epitome of a non-commissioned officer. I think that that's the epitome of a good leader. And so I would say that as we look at Dr. King and his legacy, let us not forget the way that he led. And I think we could take lessons from that, especially as we compete for talent in the 21st century, where everybody is trying to get the talent that's out there. Leadership matters, leadership counts. And I think we've got to strive to be better leaders.
Yeah, I think the other key to success too is he was a good communicator, he was a good listener, mm-hmm. and he led by example. It goes back to your point about non-commissioned officers. You know, 82% of the force in all services is non-commissioned officers. So that's really what he did. And people trusted him. You know, I've talked to a lot of people in my life that, you know, I'd sort of listen to them and hear what they say, but if I trust you and I believe in you, I'll follow you anywhere. And I think that's what he had. Well, I think you've already answered this question. When I'm asking, what can we collectively learn from Dr. King? Is there anything else? You answered a lot of them right there, I think, a minute ago.
Yeah. So, you know, another like great quote from Dr. King, and I think there's so many, right? I think one of the other quotes that I liked, and I think is especially relevant in today's world, He said that injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. And he had these great lines, and he said that we are tied in the single garment of destiny, meaning that what happens to one directly, indirectly, impacts all of us. And so I think the big takeaway is that, you know, we are all in this together. You know, we are all in this together. So we've got to make sure that we are stewards for each other. You know, as a non-commissioned officer, you know, you would walk the line, right? When you're in the field, you would walk the perimeter. You would make sure people's weapons are cleaned and all those other things. Because what happens to one person indirectly impacts what happens to everyone else. And I think that is the big lesson for us, you know, especially now. I think we could even look back on the pandemic, right? We look back on when we just kind of got into COVID, you know, what we started doing, we started checking on each other more. And you know, there was this kind of outpouring of like concern and care. And I think those are the things that are important, especially in today's world.
Yeah.
As we become more and more dependent on technology and we're not seeing each seeing in person, we're not doing those things more. I think those are the things that we could learn.
I think the other thing though is and you really hit on, a lot of people sometimes focus on the big things. If you'd focus on really the basic fundamentals of life, you know, in the Army, we say, you know, your weapon cleaning and dig your fighting position. I'm just basic little stuff. But when you look at society and life, the basics would be good morning, how you doing? Smile when you go by somebody, nod your head, do something, be polite to people, be courteous, you know, to everybody that you're around. But be respectful of people. And I think that's it's the basic fundamentals of life and the basic fundamentals of the military that pulls things together. We have a tendency sometimes to focus on the big things, where so little small things are so critical and so important. It's, I mean, I was telling somebody the other day that I walk by people all the time, and I always say good afternoon, good morning, good evening, whatever. And it amazes me sometimes how many people don't say anything back to you, you know. It's we have to get into a way, and I think Dr. King wanted to do the same thing. He wanted, and I think the Army's this way, but I think he wanted to make the country a melting pot, to make sure that we all pulled ourselves together and we sort of, you know, we worked better together and understood each other a lot more. So anyway, it's a good discussion. I enjoy it. What's your favorite Dr. King speech and why?
Yeah, so I think, you know, there's a lot of people who like the I Have a Dream speech, right? You know, a lot of people quote that I Have a Dream. So my favorite Dr. King speech is really not a speech, but it was really a sermon. And as you know, over his lifetime, Dr. King gave about over 2,500 speeches. And in 1964, there was this one sermon that he gave. And it was about the drum major instinct. And, you know, it really, a lot of people thought that it was Dr. King's like original work, but it really wasn't. There was a preacher before, and I can't remember his name, who actually talked about, you know, this drum major instinct. And what they were talking about is this desire for people to be first out there, first to get recognition and to receive praise and all those other things. But the thing that I liked about that was that Dr. King didn't say, well, you know, being first is this kind of bad thing. He said, there are things that you should be first for, like be the first to help somebody else, be the first to love somebody, be the first to care. So I think helping to kind of, you know, lay these things out by talking about, you know, this kind of drum major instinct. We should be drum majors, but there are things that we should be drum majors for. Like in the Army, we're drum majors for the protection of the nation. So we want to be out first to do that. We want to be out first in ensuring that we could provide access and opportunity for people who want to be a part of this great Army. So I think there are the things that I really liked about that drum major instinct sermon. And so that really is my favorite of Dr. King's work.
Well, I think the other thing too is you gotta show people you care, you know, and people know. And I'm sitting there again while you're talking. I was thinking about it. You may remember this. A lot of people may not. But are you real or Memorex? Remember that years ago?
Absolutely.
That would somebody say. So if you're real or Memorex, I guess he was real. He cared about people. He wanted to make a difference. And I think there's no question in my mind he made a difference. We have a lot more to talk about, so don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. You're watching Your Next Mission video podcast.
You're watching Your Next Mission, proudly presented by the Cavalry Agency. They help brands dominate no matter their size. Ideas, strategy, action. This is Cavalry. Learn more at cavalry.com. Navy Federal Credit Union, the most trusted credit union owned by members of the military community, serving all branches of the armed forces and their families. Their members are the mission. Learn more at NavyFederal.org. Purdue Global, providing affordable online education for hardworking adults. Learn more about a personalized, innovative, and world-class education at purdueglobal.edu. Veterans United Home Loans, the number one VA lender for 5 straight years. If you're buying, they're funding your dreams. Learn more at veteransunited.com. Now back to your host, the 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, Jack L. Tilley.
Welcome back. We're blessed to be here today with Anselm Beach, Deputy Assistant Secretary of the Army for Equity and Inclusion. And I want all our viewers to reach out to me directly. Tell us about your transition. Tell us what topics you'd like us to cover. You can also text me at 844-424-1134, and I'll reach out to you. Or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. Anselm, we're heading into our final segment with you today, and I hope you enjoyed it just as much as I have. I just have just a couple more questions. Can you describe an America without Dr. King's journey and the influence?
Wow.
That's a big question.
It is a great question. I think, you know, when we think about, you know, the work that Dr. King's done, we've got to realize that one of the things that Dr. King was really, really instrumental in is the 1964 Civil Rights Act. And the 1964 Civil Rights Act talked about ensuring that, you know, we had a workplace that was free from discrimination. It had a workplace really that, you know, allowed people to help to remove barriers based on race, or gender, national origin, religion, and so I would just say national origin. So just I could simply say that. Think about that for a minute, because I wasn't born in the United States. I am a United States citizen, but I wasn't born in the United States. So had it not been for some of the work that Dr. King had done, maybe I would not have the opportunities that I've had in this great country of ours. I could also think about, you know, a lot of, you know, who we have in leading our country, who we have in terms of some of the top talent across the federal sector, across the private sector. You know, when we think about, you know, the last big challenge, which was COVID, the fact that as a country, we were able to produce a vaccine that quickly, the fact that we were able to keep our country running, you know, really gets to the heart of, you know, a collective nation with all different types of people, all different types of skills and talents, and how quickly we could mobilize them. I think we've got to really think about Dr. King's legacy and how he was instrumental in making sure that people who would not have normally been into the talent marketplace are there now, right? You know, the fact that we have people with disabilities who could be in, who would have access and opportunity to work and to do great things on behalf of our country, and how they could have been left behind. So I think, you know, those are the things that we really, really, you know, need to kind of think through as we think about the impact, and what I would say of the magnitude of the man, Dr. Martin Luther King.
Yeah. You know, sometimes I think we take 2 steps forward and 1 step back. Do you think that's true? I mean, like when you look at the military, I think, is a melting pot. And I think they're a good example of what right looks like in our country. But sometimes it's a balancing act about especially when you talk about race relations. It's always a balancing act. Do you think we're going forward or backwards, or do you think, you know, we need to do a little bit more, of course, and everything, but how do you think we're doing? Do you think we're losing ground, or we're making ground, or?
I think they're different eras. And what I would say here is that I think we are at this kind of pivotal time when there's a lot of change that's happening. Mm-hmm. And when there is big change in any system, people kind of get anxious and they kind of, you know, do things that would be sometimes outside of their character. And what I mean by that is, you know, let's kind of think for 1 minute about how the demographics in the country is changing, right? So the demographics in the country changing quite a bit, right? We have a lot more people who, and especially young people, who are not identifying as Black, white, or what have you. We have a lot of multicultural people, and they prefer to identify that way. And the things that they're focused on is very different than things that me, you and I would kind of think about. Mm-hmm. They think about, you know, how they become part of something that's bigger than themselves. They think about how to make a difference. They think about how they relate to each other. And so when we say, you know, are we making two steps forward and how many steps, you know, four steps backward or one step forward, two steps backward, I think, you know, we've got to be able to put some things in perspective. And I would say specific for the military, some of the things that people say right now is that, like, as they say, for example, like diversity, equity, inclusion, you know, is it's new, it's bad, it's this or it's that or the other. And I would give you two stories that you that I think really gets to the moment and the importance and the magnitude of the moment. So you would remember the M16 mm-hmm. A1 rifle. Yeah. But the M16 A1 rifle was designed for right-handed people. Because, you know, when you went to the range, they would ask their left-handed fires to put their hand up and they would give them that deflector that they would snap into.
Yeah, I remember that.
And you remember that. The reason why they did that was because if you're left-handed, every time you fire that weapon, a hard shell casing would eject right into your face. Yep. Who would want to fire that weapon if you were left-handed? Nobody. And so when we talk about the workplace and we talk about different people in the workplace, we are always examining the workplace to determine what barriers they are and how they're preventing people from being their authentic and true selves.
Yeah.
And so as you well know, you needed in a firefight, you need every person to be able to engage the enemy.
Yeah.
And if you've got one person who's scared because when they fire that weapon, they're going to get hurt, they're not going to engage, right? Even in the face of danger.
Yeah.
And I think those are the ways that we've got to think about. You know, we need every person, every American to be able to contribute to our nation. And we have to make sure that there are no barriers that prevent people from participating. And so that's what we've got to think about when we think about where we are right now and the changes that we are happening, that we are having across our, you know, across our country.
Yeah.
The other thing is that we got to think about is, you know, a few years ago, we didn't know what Uber was. We didn't know what Lyft was, but somebody saw the need to innovate and to bring a new product. And now we are doing these things and we are saying, how did we live without this? And I think those are the things that we've got to think about. You know, the difference is, provide us with opportunities to innovate. And I think we've got to think holistically. Last thing I would tell you is that, you know, you talk about, you know, what we could learn. And I think, you know, we could learn a lot from the Army. We could learn a lot from the Army.
There's no question
because the
about
Army
that,
has
right?
this. Absolutely. The Army has always had an inclusive leadership model. It's called Be No Do. Mm-hmm. It talks about the attributes. It talks about the competencies and the values that each leader need to have. Mm-hmm. And you talk about how we lead with dignity and respect. I think if we follow those the tenets of the Be No Do model, you know, as a nation, we'd be a lot better off.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. You said a lot of stuff, and hopefully I can remember most of it. I can remember all of it. The one thing where I was training a soldier with I was a drill sergeant, but I was training a soldier with the M16. And I remember one time that I had a soldier that was taking his head, putting it all over and looking with his left eye. And I said, why are you doing that? He said, well, because I'm left-handed. I'm trying to shoot right-handed. I said, oh, my goodness, that was tough. No, that's a good point, sir. I appreciate that. What do you think the next 20 to 30 years are going to look like with respect to race relations in this country?
Yeah, so the funniest thing is that I have a 13-year-old daughter. And I remember, like, back in the aftermath of George Floyd, mm-hmm. My daughter lives in Alabama, and I called her and she says, "Dad, I'm going out to a protest." And I said, "You going out to a protest?" Yeah. And she said, "Yeah, because it's my generation who's going to have to fix all this stuff." Could you imagine that, right? So a 13-year-old is telling me that her generation is the generation that has to fix this stuff. And so I chuckled to myself because I said, you know, a lot of times we say, oh my gosh, this young generation, what are they going to do?
Yeah.
But a 13-year-old that conscious to say their challenges, then, and I'm at 13 years old, I'm up for the challenge. My daughter is no different from a lot of other young people out there who see challenges and they want to fix them because they know that our country is going to be better off when we have people who accept the challenges to face problems head on.
Well, I think sometimes as a 13-year-old, I just want her to enjoy life. You know, I just want her to, you know, whatever 13-year-olds do nowadays, I don't know. Sometimes I think that we educate kids, and I should say educate them in the wrong way, but we tell them maybe a little bit too much, and we're probably going in the right direction. So I think it depends on who's telling them what, and who mm-hmm. are their influencers. And I think with all the social media stuff that you have out there nowadays, that you have to be careful about who's influencing who and what they're saying, because mm-hmm. it may not be correct. You know,
absolutely.
And that's sort of a scary thought. The other thing I'll tell you, I was talking to somebody the other day, there has to be a balance, you know. Race relations is certainly important. Martin Luther King, what he did was certainly important. But there also has to be a balance on the other side. So I'm not less important than you are, and you're not less important than I am. So what's the balance in the country? You know, what you're doing is important. What I'm doing is important. That's why I say it's about communications. It's about talking to each other. It's about finding out what the differences are. And how do you educate people more about this? I said something to somebody the other day. I said, why don't we have educational classes in all our schools, in our grade schools, and all that stuff about equal opportunity, you know, about equity and inclusion within our educational system? I think it's a good idea to have those classes, and I think it'd probably help us a lot. Anyway, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No, I totally agree with you. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I've got a colleague of mine. He's out of UNC Chapel Hill. His name is Al Cigars. You know, he is a distinguished professor, and we wrote a paper together that was published in MIT Sloan Management Review back in the summer. And what we talked about there is about, you know, this notion of diversity, equity, inclusion as a way that organizations could engage and as a way that they could drive innovation. And I tell people sometimes it feels like the Tale of Two Cities, that Charles Dickens novel, right? It was the best of times, it was the worst of times, it was a time of enlightenment, a time of darkness. And I think it's the, you know, it's like that Tale of Two Cities, because when we talk about diversity, it's the best of times because we are talking about it. We talk about diversity as the worst of times because a lot of times we are talking about it in the wrong way. And I think we've got to really get back to the value of these things. You know, the Army is a model for diversity, right? Because you think about it, we have the infantry, we've got armor, field artillery, but the armor, you know, tankers can't go but so far if you don't have maintenance and you don't have logistics, mm-hmm. right? And that really is, you know, we've got to provide the right context. So that's why education is important when we talk about these things. We, as Dr. King said, we are all in this together.
Yeah.
So we've got to figure out the ways that we could work together because we all depend on each other. And we've got to get back to this notion of working together because that's where the benefit is. There are differences. We've got to have the hard conversations to understand what those differences are, not because of the differences, but because we need to know what we need to learn from those differences so we could be more effective. Much like my squad leader did to me. You know, he didn't say, "Oh my gosh, you're a soldier now, you know, you're in America now. Why don't you know about American football?" He sat me down and he taught me, like, these are the things. I left there that night more excited than ever because here's somebody who just practice like leadership excellence. And those are the things that we've got to get back to. Having conversations.
Yeah, it's also about coaching and teaching. It's about developing, mm-hmm. because what you're doing is developing the next generation of mm-hmm. young adults and kids, whether or not your 13-year-old daughter or whatever, but it's about coaching and teaching people and telling them what right looks like. And I mm-hmm. think it's really important. You know, this has been an incredible discussion. I probably could talk to you for a couple hours about this, but I just say God bless you for what you're doing, and you're making a difference. And I certainly appreciate it because I know working with the Army and doing all the stuff you're doing in the Army loves that. But thank you and keep up the good work. Any final thoughts? Anything that maybe we missed and that you want to share with the audience?
So, you know, the last thing that I would say to you is I still remember my first division run at Fort Stewart, Georgia. Sure. And I remember, you know, the CG came out that morning. Of course, I had to wake up at 4 o'clock, get to the unit. There was one formation. Then we had to march the parade field for the main formation in Reveille. And then we go running, right? And the CG comes out, you know, and he said, it's a great day to be in the Army. Of course, I woke up at 4 o'clock and, you know, after we do division run, I come back. I'm tired. I've got to get home to get a shower and come back. I'm thinking, what's so great about this? But I think, you know, in a lot of instances, where you sit or where you stand determines what you
Absolutely.
See.
Absolutely.
And I look back and I think about it. If I were that CG, it'd be absolutely a great day to be in the Army. Because when the CG looked out and he saw, he had everything there to go and complete his mission. He had the infantry, the armor, the field artillery, maintenance. He had everything there to complete his mission. And as I think about it right now, you know, everybody sees things a little bit differently. Yeah. But we still have the best damn army in the world. It's still a good day to be in the Army. It's still a great day to be a soldier. It's still a great day to be an American. We have challenges, but, you know, we could work towards them. And I think that's what diversity, equity, inclusion does. It provides us a way to have meaningful conversations. That way we could bring out the best in people. For us, it's about how we optimize talent. It's about how we build inclusive environments to fight and win our nation's wars.
Yeah.
So again, you know, honored to be here. Yeah.
Well, you know, again, every time you say something, you make me think of something else there. But the thing about it, you know what the word sergeant means?
No, go ahead.
The word sergeant means to serve. You know,
yeah.
You're a servant. And so you have to serve the people above you and below you. And I always used to tell people, if we would just focus on our, whatever your responsibility are, you know, as a sergeant, focus on your squad, or on your team, or on your platoon, or on your company, or on your battalion, how good a place this would be if we just focus on our lane of responsibility. And I think sometimes people are so interested about what's going on up here, where we, just like I said a little while ago, it's the basic fundamentals of treating people, respect people, dignity, respect. It's all that stuff, but it has to start at the bottom and work its way up. And that's why education is so important to me.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, look out. I enjoyed it. Thank you so much.
All right. Thanks so much.
Hey, thanks to Anselm Beach, Deputy Assistant of Secretary of the Army for Equity and Inclusion, for being with us today. I'm Jack L. Tully, 12th Sergeant Major of the Army, and you've been watching Your Next Mission video podcast. And thank you for watching today. Please visit our website at yournextmission.org and leave me a review. I always say, I hope it's a good review, but if it's a bad one, I guess I can take that. You can also visit our partners there who will provide you with so many services that will assist you in your transition from the military. Also visit our corporate partners there and see all the jobs that are available. Please know we want to assist you any way we can. I always like saying it twice every week. Please know we want to assist you any way we can. Please follow me on all my social media channels, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, YouTube, LinkedIn. And if you enjoyed this discussion with Anselm, and I know that you did, please like us. Click on that subscribe button. Don't forget, we want to hear from you. Please leave me a message or send me a text at 844-424-1134, or send me an email at smatilly@yournextmission.org. Thanks again to Anselm Beach for joining us today. It was just wonderful having him on the show. He's such a wealth of knowledge and education. I just enjoyed it a great deal. At this part of the show, I always get a chance to get my final thoughts. And today, I just want to tell you, it's important for us to learn about the differences of each other. You know, culture is so important. Martin Luther King, you know, he did have a dream about making sure that we all worked together. We all melded into each other. We all loved each other. We all worked with each other. And I think sometimes we lose sight of that. It's about life. It's about God. It's about a country. It's about America. It's about doing the right things for all of us. It is about diversity and inclusion. It's about you and it's about me. And so don't forget, let's change things. Let's make it better for all of us. You know, again, thanks for watching. And thanks to Cloudcast Media, New Mind Studios, and of course, our four presenting sponsors, Calvert Agency, Navy Federal Credit Union, Purdue University Global, and Veterans United Home Loans for making Your Next Mission happen. We appreciate all you do for our military. And as always, see you on the high ground. Hooah!
You've been listening to Your Next Mission, brought to you by the American Freedom Foundation. Learn more by visiting yournextmission.org.